to Broadcaster at Large, challenging the assumptions we live by. I'm your host and producer, Kelly L. Romaris. In the 25 years from 1983 to 2008, the number of people in the world who were diagnosed with diabetes increased sevenfold. Type 1 diabetes occurs when the pancreas does not produce enough insulin to properly control blood sugar levels. It is generally considered to be an autoimmune disease in which the body's own immune system destroys the insulin-producing cells in the pancreas. In type 2 diabetes, the body is resistant to the insulin the pancreas produces, or a person is eating too many carbohydrates and sugars for the body to process properly. Type 2 is caused by a combination of factors, including poor diet, sedentary lifestyle, stress, and environmental toxins. Now, cutting-edge research is uncovering a type 3 diabetes. The cause of type 3 appears to be a staple of modern life, dirty electricity. The people who have this type 3 diabetes are hypersensitive to electromagnetic fields, EMF, that they encounter in everyday life. In 2005, the World Health Organization defined electromagnetic hypersensitivity, or EHS, as, quote, characterized by a variety of nonspecific symptoms which afflicted individuals attribute to exposure to EMF. The collection of symptoms is not part of any recognized syndrome, unquote. Dr. Magda Havis, Ph.D., a professor in the Environmental and Resource Studies Department of Trent University in Peterborough in Ontario, Canada, spoke to us about her team's research on the link between dirty electricity and diabetes. Dr. Havis began the interview by defining dirty electricity.
Dirty electricity is something that's quite common in homes.
Could you define that, please?
Dirty electricity?
Yes.
It's easier to define clean electricity. Clean electricity is a very smooth wave that oscillates 60 times a second. So it's 60 hertz cycle, and it's just a nice smooth up and down wave. Dirty electricity has spikes on it, has these surges that come through when people turn light switches on and off or when they use certain types of devices. And the more of these spikes that you have on your electricity, the dirtier it is. And we know that the dirty electricity affects sensitive electronic equipment, and we've since learned that it also has biological effects, so it makes some people sick.
What exactly was your experiment?
We were doing research at a school in Toronto where one of the students was electrically sensitive, and we measured the dirty electricity in the school. We put filters in a blind way so that no one in the school knew what we were doing. And then we looked at the response of both the teachers and the students, and we found that when we cleaned up the dirty electricity, they had more energy, they had fewer aches and pains, they had a better mood. So people were just healthier and performing better in the school environment, and that goes for both children in the school as well as the teachers. And I met the person who had designed these filters that clean up the dirty electricity, and he told me that when the dirty electricity is cleaned up in the home, diabetics respond. And so I got very excited about this because that's an objective test. When you prick someone's finger and you get a drop of blood, they can't control how much blood sugar is there. And so we had an objective way of now testing people to see if they were responding to different frequencies. And so we started doing work with diabetics from all over North America. And we found that whether or not you were a type 1 or a type 2 diabetic, if you were sensitive to dirty electricity, then your blood sugar levels would go up, and they would go up within a matter of about 20 minutes. So this was a very positive way of documenting electrosensitivity among diabetics. There's a type of diabetes called brittle diabetes, and these are people who have difficulty regulating their blood sugar. They eat properly, they're on medication, they exercise, and for some reason, suddenly their blood sugar will either spike, it'll go very, very high, or it'll drop, it'll go very, very low. Both of them are life-threatening situations. And doctors have wondered, well, what is causing this? Is it something in the environment? And one of the things we're finding is that electromagnetics is one of the things in the environment that will cause this to happen.
Have any other scientists reproduced your results?
With the blood sugar, we have a scientist in Sweden who is planning on reproducing the results. We've had some people in Japan who have reproduced the results, although they did a different type of study, but basically got the same type of thing, which means that individuals who are having difficulty regulating their blood sugar, when you introduce them into a clean electromagnetic environment, their blood sugar drops, and so they have much better control over it. And we're hoping that soon there'll be a larger trial looking so we can actually determine what percentage of the diabetic population responds this way. We don't know. We don't think all diabetics respond this way, but some percentage do, and it would be nice to know what that percentage is.
Dr. Samuel Milham, MD, MPH, is a retired epidemiologist from Washington State. An epidemiologist studies the distribution of diseases in populations. Dr. Milham is convinced that our modern-day diseases of civilization, including the diabetes epidemic, have more to do with electrical pollution than lifestyle choices such as diet. Case in point, the Amish, who shun most technology.
They have the same body mass index, they're just as fat as we are. They eat a lot of greasy stuff. They do exercise a little bit more, but their diabetes incidence is about 40% of ours. And I think the epidemic of diabetes in kids, little kids now, infants are getting it. I think it's all through this RF.
Diabetics are at increased risk for cardiovascular disease, another illness tied to lifestyle choices such as diet and exercise. But Dr. Milham points to an Indian study that shows electricity to be the culprit.
I looked around for populations that were unelectrified. Unfortunately, populations that aren't electrified are usually third world populations, and they don't have good vital registration systems, I mean, for count deaths. But in India, there was clear, this is a cardiovascular disease study, as I recall, the people lived out in the rural areas that didn't have electricity had much lower cardiovascular disease mortality rates and associated deals like hypertension, high cholesterol, and the rest of that, in spite of the fact that they ate a lot more fat than their C comparison groups. And it was just a really nice demonstration in real time, fairly recently. If you looked at two populations that were comparable, one that had electricity, one that didn't, the ones with electricity had a whole lot more cardiovascular disease endpoints.
Dr. Havis says that electromagnetic sensitivity is not a birth defect.
I think you develop electromagnetic sensitivity. I think it's very similar to a sensitivity you might develop to eating certain types of food. We have people now who are gluten intolerant, who are lactose intolerant, and individuals who respond to chemicals in their environment. That's called multiple chemical sensitivity. And I think the same thing happens for electrical sensitivity. There's a number of things we found that make you more prone to develop a sensitivity. And they include, if you've ever been in an accident, whiplash, for example, where you've had damage to your spinal cord or your central nervous system, then you're likely to be more sensitive. So if you've had physical trauma, if you've had exposure to toxic chemicals in the environment, particularly pesticides or things like mercury, if you have mercury amalgam in your mouth and your as part of your fillings, then you tend to develop the sensitivity more.
According to Dr. Thomas Rau, medical director of the Paracelsus Clinic in Switzerland, it is estimated that 3-8% of populations in developed countries experience serious electrohypersensitivity symptoms today, and 35% experience mild symptoms. Dr. Ole Johansson of Sweden predicts that by 2017, half the people in the industrialized world will have electrohypersensitivity. So if you are a diabetic who suspects you are also sensitive to electrical pollution, can you get a test for it from your doctor?
Well, first of all, if you go into your doctor's office, it's quite likely that he will have fluorescent lights, a lot of computers, other types of equipment that will generate dirty electricity. And so simply being in his office for any length of time, for people who are sensitive, their blood sugar will increase. So that's one of the things we're trying to recommend to doctors is that they have a very clean waiting room and a very clean environment when they're doing this type of testing. However, one of the things that we found is that if you work out on a treadmill, exercise should reduce your blood sugar And for those people who are sensitive to dirty electricity, working out on a treadmill will actually cause the blood sugar to increase rather than decrease. And so simply doing a 10-minute, a 15-minute, or 20-minute walk on a treadmill, measuring the blood sugar before and after, if your blood sugar doesn't go down, which is what it should do, then it's quite likely that you've got type 3 diabetes.
Now, there's been an explosion of diabetes in the last 30 years. There's a lot of different causes for it, the types of chemicals in our foods, the portions, the sedentariness, etc. But what is it about EMFs that would impair someone's ability to metabolize carbohydrates and blood sugars properly?
Well, we're not really certain of what the mechanism is that's causing or that's contributing to this type 3 diabetes. We have some evidence from animal studies showing that there's less insulin produced by the body when animals are exposed to high electromagnetic fields. We have evidence that the insulin that is generated is not metabolized as effectively, but we really don't know what's happening specifically with the individuals that we've worked with. And obviously, the mechanism is an important follow-up that we need scientists to do.
I will have to look into this because I have been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, but I am constantly surrounded by computers and electrical equipment as a radio journalist. What can we do to safeguard ourselves in the home, in the office?
Well, for some people, like people in your situation, it'll be very difficult to reduce your exposure because you're surrounded with it. You have to be. But I think most of the population can do a lot to minimize their exposure. For example, instead of using wireless routers in your home to connect to the internet, you can use wired routers, and that would reduce your exposure to microwave radiation. If you have cordless phone in your home, I recommend that you replace it with a landline, something that's connected by wire once again, because this makes people reactive. If you're using your computer, you can move away from it as far as possible. So if you have a keyboard that extends out, that would do a lot of good. So you can minimize your exposure by simply replacing some of the technology you have in your home or by using it slightly differently.
Okay, cell phones, we have had controversy for years about their emissions. What about other kinds of electronics? What would you be most concerned about as far as people using them?
Well, your cell phone or your cordless phone in the home, they're both very, very similar. If anything, your cordless phone, if you happen to have one that has DECT technology, D-E-C-T, this technology causes the base of it to radiate as soon as it's plugged into an outlet. So even when you're not using your cordless phone in your home, it's radiating these microwaves. Anything wireless in your home, a wireless router, a wireless security service, a wireless baby monitor, for example, some of them are using the same type of DECT technology, and so your infants are being exposed to microwaves at a very young age, which we know is not safe. But certainly using a cell phone and putting it to your head is not a very wise thing to do, and individuals who are concerned about this have come out with a whole list of recommendations, including using it in a speaker mode or using an air tube headset that prevents the phone from being placed directly against your ear. And not wearing it on your body, not wearing it in a hip pocket, for example, is also important because the other part of your body, not only your brain, but your reproductive organs are also sensitive to this. And we have evidence that men who use a cell phone for more than 2 hours a day have an increased problems with their sperm. There's reduced motility, there's abnormal morphology of the sperm, and there's a reduced viability. So the sperm doesn't do the job that it should. So there's lots of things that people can do by minimizing their exposure to this radiation.
Well, now, what about just walking around? You go into any shop nowadays, especially if it's a cafe or bakery, what have you, and they have free Wi-Fi. It seems like we're surrounded by it even if we don't personally use it.
That's right. And if you have developed a sensitivity to this radiation, it really limits where you can go and what you can do, particularly in large cities. Hotels have them, airports have them. In some locations, there's citywide Wi-Fi, which means the entire downtown core of an urban center will have wireless. And if you've developed a sensitivity, you just become so ill that you can't be exposed. So it really limits the mobility of people. And we're also putting them in schools, and I think this is a very, very dangerous move, especially in elementary schools. We just don't want our kids exposed to this microwave radiation. It's not good for their health, and we have evidence already in some schools where children are coming home with headaches. They're asking for aspirins after school hours when they're perfectly fine on the weekend. So we really want to minimize this type of exposure. And in areas where you have the citywide Wi-Fi, I think you're going to have some very sick people if you don't have them already. The other thing you can do is you can filter your home, so you can clean up the dirty electricity. There's filters available that you just plug into electric outlets, and they clean up the dirty electricity instantly. There are larger versions of these that are used in factories, for example, to protect sensitive equipment, but they inadvertently also protect the people who work there.
The filters were developed by Martin Graham and David Stetzer. Dr. Graham is Professor Emeritus of the School of Electrical Engineering and Computer Science at UC Berkeley. We visited him on campus, where he demonstrated both his measuring device and the filter.
I brought some stuff to demonstrate to you some of the equipment I've been involved with. And I have a 200-watt equivalent high-efficiency compact fluorescent.
One of those squiggly bulbs that people use.
Yeah, it's a spiral bulb one. And I can plug it in. So you can see it's on now. And you should notice that the bottom of the bulb is about an inch or 1.5 inches thick. There's a round cylindrical chamber that isn't emitting any light. It's the spiral glass part that emits the light. But in that bottom cylindrical thing, it's about an inch or 1.5 inches high, about 2 or 3 inches in diameter. There are electronic circuits that are changing the 60 cycle power into 30,000 cycles high voltage power to make the bulb fluoresce. And I have a meter that I developed, and it has no leads coming out for you to attach. It's attached when you plug it in. It has no battery in it. It works off the current that comes from the wire. And it gives a digital readout. In this case, it's around 600, which is indicative of 30,000 cycle a second, 10th volt or so voltages on the power wires. It's so small and usually not observed by industrial electricians. You can see it if you use an oscilloscope. And if you take the trouble to block out the 120 volts, 60 cycles, otherwise, it's the only thing you see.
And that's with two of these filters on
the
strip.
In this particular case, if we take the filters out, the reading goes up maybe 100 or 200. No, I guess 300, from 600 to 900.
Yeah, I've seen 1015 was the largest number here.
That's a transient when it is turning on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because we're plugged into a plug in the electrical engineering department building. And this building is loaded with the kinds of stuff that generates these kinds of voltages on the wire. Some work that was done in Kazakhstan checked how people felt compared to what the meter readings were. And they found that even people that were sensitive weren't bothered if the readings were low, like 25. And they thought it was undesirable for the readings to be over 50. Other people come up with numbers that are somewhat different. But Sam Millam has seen readings in this school that go off scale, which is, means over 2,000. And there are teachers in those classrooms that have developed cancer. And usually when the meters get put in, the children are less affected by asthma. And
you mentioned ADHD as well, the attention deficit.
Yeah, that seems to be correlated with this also. Sometimes the teachers have an unruly class and then have no problem. Sometimes that's true, and the superintendent of schools doesn't believe it's true and doesn't work at getting any filters put in. So it's not just a technical problem, it's a social structure, a society problem.
Dr. Havas's findings linking electrohypersensitivity and diabetes are not being welcomed in traditional medical circles.
They're having a very hard time getting their head around this as a type of diabetes. And I've talked to a few medical doctors who specialize in this, and initially they show a great deal of interest and enthusiasm, and then suddenly they just don't want to have anything to do with it. And so I'm not quite certain why that is. As a doctor, I think your job is to help your patients heal and to keep them as healthy as possible. And I think what's unfortunately beginning to happen with our medical profession is that many of them are simply drug pushers. They're prescribing pills, and the more pills they prescribe, the better job they think they're doing, and that's just the contrary to my understanding of health. And a lot of these doctors, I think, get a commission on how much medication they actually recommend for their patients, and so it really would cut into their profit margin. And I know that's a very negative way to think about it, but I've been absolutely stunned by the lack of interest in finding something that would actually benefit diabetics, that would help them regulate their blood sugar, that wouldn't cost them any money whatsoever in terms of medication. And yet the medical profession is not even willing to look at this seriously.
I would think that if a person is type 3 diabetic or has that contributing to their diabetes, and you can clean up their environment rather than giving them medication, then maybe they can go without medication, maybe they can go with reduced medication. That doesn't seem to be what Big Pharma wants.
No, exactly. And I think you've just hit the nail on the head. It's Big Pharma that's calling the shots. It's not the American Medical Association anymore. I think they're so closely entwined that it's really hard to separate one from the other.
Dr. Milham is also having difficulty getting his message out.
I've been on this for 10 years, and I can't get papers published in this country anymore. I've got 100 scientific papers published, but it's getting harder and harder. You know, you're going up against the billion-dollar cell phone lobby, and the utility industry's got a lot of money, and nobody wants to hear the bad news because the government's not going to change a damn thing. I've written to OSHA and NIOSH, and I've written to Congress and the Health and Human Services Committee to warn them about this. Nobody even answers you. I did get on Larry King a number of years ago, and there's an article in Prevention Magazine this year that covers some of this, but it's been impossible to get into major media to get the word out. I mean, who owns major media, you know? He owns NBC, you know, And so they don't want the word out, and the cell phone companies sure as hell don't. We're talking about 50% of cancers and 50% of heart disease and maybe 60% of diabetes is related to this stuff, this man-made stuff.
But Dr. Havas and her research team keep plugging away. What's your next step in this research?
Well, I'm basically trying to come up with diagnostics for the medical profession. And we started working on looking at the heart. A lot of people who complain of electrical sensitivity claim that they have a regular heart rate or palpitations that they can feel. They feel incredible anxiety that comes on very suddenly. So we've started doing testing of the heart as well, and we're finding that when we expose sensitive individuals to the equivalent of a cordless phone without them talking on it, just the base station of the cordless phone, that their heart goes erratic or it really starts beating very quickly. And we've done this in double-blind studies as well, so it's not a psychological reaction, it's a physiological reaction. And so this is another type of test that we can recommend to doctors to perform. We're looking at the blood. We're actually taking a look at live blood samples where you prick your finger, put the blood onto a slide, put it under a microscope and look at it. Simply look at what the cells look like, whether they're single cells or whether they're clumped. And we're finding that with people who are sensitive, their blood clumps when they use a computer or when they're talking on a mobile phone. And the clumping of the blood reduces the amount of oxygen that goes to your tissues and can account for some of the symptoms that these individuals feel, which is sort of a tingling sensation or numbness in their fingertips, feeling dizzy, feeling a bit nauseous. And some people have actually passed out from being exposed, which would be a severe case, a blood reaction as well as a heart reaction. So we're trying to come up with diagnostics. that doctors can use that are objective, that are reproducible, rather than relying simply on subjective symptoms in a questionnaire, for example.
But Dr. Milham thinks that anecdotal evidence should not be underestimated.
Hey, I'll tell you another little anecdote. The school I'm studying, one of the teachers had really severe type 2 diabetes. And in fact, he had amputation of part of his leg and tips of his fingers, and he could never get his blood sugar under control. He retired a couple of years ago, and his diabetes is gone. He just can't get a blood sugar over 107. I mean, that's that kind of anecdote you got to pay attention to.
Dr. Graham says the filters worked well for a woman in his own department.
5 or 10 years ago, there was one secretary in the central office, and she was using a computer heavily, plus some other electronic equipment like a fax machine and a copy machine. And they were all plugged in to an outlet strip, you know, with multiple outlets on it. And that was on the floor right by her feet. And she was getting sick late in the afternoons in the latter part of the week and get headaches. And I put in some filters on that strip for her, and she didn't get the headaches anymore.
Dr. Havis thinks her research is moving in a positive direction.
You know, to me this is very exciting because it's challenging the way that we understand diabetes. And I think whenever our understanding of science is challenged, then we end up learning so much more about it. And I think it's really good news for diabetics who might very well be able to go without medication or with reduced medication if they can clean up their electromagnetic environment. And I think that would be very good news for them.
You've been listening to a program on dirty electricity and diabetes. Our guests were Dr. Magda Havis, Ph.D., a professor in the Environmental and Resource Studies Department of Trent University in Ontario, Canada. Dr. Samuel Milham, M.D., M.P.H., a retired epidemiologist from Washington State. And Dr. Martin Graham, professor emeritus of the School of Electrical Engineering and Computer Science at UC Berkeley. Dr. Milham's book, Dirty Electricity, published by iUniverse, is due out in the summer of 2010. Information on the Graham-Stetzer filters and the health effects of electrical pollution is available at dirtyelectricity.org and electricalpollution.com. You have been listening to Broadcaster at Large, Challenging the Assumptions We Live By. Theme music composed and performed by Jeff Watson. To give feedback, send an email to kelliasworld@yahoo.com. That's K-E-L-L-I-A-S, world@yahoo.com. I'm Kelly Romaris. Thanks for listening.